morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us. Before we start our show, we want to acknowledge that one of TPD's canine heroes who was shot Thursday night, and we understand he will fully recover, but despite being shot twice, Officer Tango still caught the bad guy. We want to thank Tango, his handler, and all our canine officers for all you do to keep Tucson safe. You are our heroes for sure. In the studio, we have Nathan. Nathan's back. And we have Benny White, who is running for recorder, but also works for the recorder's office. You don't?
No.
Okay, what do you do?
Well, I'm a political party observer.
Okay.
I have represented the Republican Party for about 20 years in oversight of elections and elections procedures, both at the local level and at the state level.
So give us a little bit about your background.
Well, I grew up as a poor kid in Oklahoma, joined the Marine Corps in 1967, served for 7 years. And then following the Marine Corps tour, I joined the Air National Guard here in Tucson and flew with them for about 14 years. After that, I flew commercial aircraft for Western Airlines and Delta Airlines for 20 years. And at the end of my commercial flying career, I decided to go to law school and picked up my JD law degree in 2007 from Concord Law School.
What inspired that?
Well, it was kind of funny. I started in 1995 with a local ordinance involving charter schools, and we had to change the city code to prevent charter schools from locating in the interior of neighborhoods. One of my neighbors was Kenny Hegland, who recently passed away, but he was a professor of law at the U of A, and he talked to me for a long time about going to law school, thought I would enjoy it. As I was finishing my flying career, I was becoming more and more involved in politics, and I thought if I had the knowledge that I would acquire during law school, it would make me much more effective in my political activities.
Okay, what is your involvement with the election process?
Well, it's been multifaceted. In the election oversight role, I have watched elections being formed in the election management system. I've tested the machines before they're used. I've been in the room when all the ballots were counted. I've been in the room when the ballots are taken out of the envelopes and evaluated whether or not they need to be duplicated. I've been in the room where the signatures are verified on the mail ballots. I've audited elections completely from both the elections department side of the house, making sure that everything that was done in the polling places was accurate and legal, and also on the recorder side to make sure that the provisional ballots were verified properly and we have complete records there. Another role that I've played is making sure that we have integrity in our elections. In 2008, I worked with my Democrat counterparts to establish the Pima County Election Integrity Commission. That commission was formed to provide greater public input into election administration here in the county. That's made up of 9 members, one from each of the 5 supervisor districts, one from each of the recognized political parties, and then Mr. Huckleberry has an attendee that doesn't vote but watches that commission. I was on that for about 8 years, and early on in that process, Secretary Bennett invited me to come to Phoenix to participate in a committee that revises the Elections Procedures Manual. That's about a 400 then and now 500-page manual that's used all over the state by election officials to administer the elections, and it gives detailed instructions as to what should be done for voter registration, for verification of nomination petitions, and how to actually conduct the election, both for mail voting and for the polling place voting. So I've been involved in depth for a very long time with voter registration issues and all of those election issues that I just talked about.
I have a note on here. It says election recount in Wisconsin in 2016. What's that about?
Well, I'm a member of the Republican National Lawyers Association, and following the 2016 election, you might recall that the Green Party challenged the election and brought suit, causing a recount in several states, Wisconsin being one of those, and then Michigan and Pennsylvania as well. I was asked to go to Wisconsin and participate there. I went to Oshkosh, Wisconsin. As it turned out, President Trump gained about 6,000 votes in that recount in Wisconsin. And One of the things that you gain from those kinds of experiences is a better understanding of how jurisdictions, either in a state or from state to state, vary greatly sometimes because the law or the interpretation of the law or the equipment that they have or the staff that they have and the procedures that they use to conduct elections. And Wisconsin's elections were very different than ours. They use mail voting as well as we do, but they don't verify the signatures on the ballots. All that's required is someone to witness your signature, and that could be anybody. It could be your child or anybody else. And there were several instances where the mail ballots were not witnessed. There was just a single signature on them. And I asked her in the recount, I said, well, what did you do with those? And they said, well, we counted them because the voter had cast the ballots. I said, well, but you don't know. They didn't comply with the law. And they said, well, we counted them anyway. And once those ballots are separated from the envelope, there's no way to find out which ballots were which. So, but it, as I say, in the total, President Trump gained about 6,000 votes in that state.
So what's involved with election oversight? I used to be an election judge. I did that for years and years. But what's involved with election oversight?
Well, there, again, are many facets to that. The Arizona statutes are very permissive, allowing political party observers in all aspects of the election procedures. And Pima County has been very open to that. So we took advantage of that, and I took advantage of that in developing procedures that we use here locally and have now been adopted in other counties in the state. And it involves, on the elections department side, while an election is being formed, people like me to be in the counting room when ballots are counted, people to be in the room where ballots are taken out of the mail ballot envelopes and looked at to see if they need to be duplicated or if there's something in there that's not a ballot. Oftentimes people will send in a water bill or something else or a ballot from a past election, all those kind of things. And the purpose of the observer being there is to make sure that the election board dealing with the ballots are doing it legally and fairly. And they're not adding votes. They're not throwing ballots away, all those kind of things that could happen. On the recorder side of the house, we have observers in the room that look over the shoulder of the people verifying the signatures. Signatures are verified by both Democrats and Republicans sitting side by side, and the political party is there to make sure that if two images appear and they're not similar, but the operator says that they're fine, to raise a question at that point, and that's resolved then by a supervisor. On election day, we're able to have observers in the polling places to make sure that the election boards in the polling places are complying with the law, that when somebody comes in and they're not on the precinct registers, for example, they're not given a regular ballot. They're given a provisional ballot. And then that provisional ballot is handled appropriately and not counted with the rest of the ballot. So there are many aspects to political party oversight.
I think a lot of people are confused about what a provisional ballot means. And we've had people, or I experienced people coming in and they couldn't remember whether they mailed in their ballot or not. You give them a provisional ballot.
Right.
And then it's checked against what's been received by your office. And one way or the other, they're going to be able to vote. If their provisional ballot is the only ballot that's been received, then they vote that way. Otherwise,
that's correct. And coming out of the 2000 election in Florida, there was a lot of rumor and myth about provisional ballots weren't counted. That's simply not the case. If a ballot is validly cast by a legal voter, all of those ballots get counted. They're counted after all the other ballots are processed, but they are all counted. And the reason that you're given a provisional ballot is that you show up at a polling place, you identify yourself with a driver's license or some other form of identification, but you're not on the precinct register, the printed precinct register, or your address is different, or your name is different. You're married now and you use a different name. So in those instances where you don't match up and you're not on the precinct register, you're required to vote a provisional ballot. Well, on that provisional ballot, you're given an affidavit envelope where you testify that you live at a particular address and you are in a particular party.
And that's an oath.
And that is an oath. That's a legal document that under perjury law, you would be liable for if you falsify that. And that ballot then goes to the recorder, and it goes through a process called verification. So, number one, they need to make sure that that voter and that name is registered someplace in the county. If they are registered in the county, the next thing they do is look at the address. Was the address an address that was applicable to the ballot they cast? And sometimes people will show up at the wrong polling place. They show up across the street or in a different part of town or whatever. And federal law requires us always to provide a ballot to anyone that shows up for any reason for voting. So they would be given a ballot, but if they cast a ballot for which they were not qualified, we don't want people voting for the lower races, the school boards, the justice of the peace, the constable, if they're not in those districts.
Right.
So those ballots would not be cast, but that affidavit and that new address, if that was the problem in the first place, becomes a change of address for the next election.
Okay. So you're not letting anything slide by. And I know, I know, you know, I've been here for a long time, and I know we've had, really, Ann has had some tight reins on the procedure, and she's on top of it. And she's run that office with a lot of integrity. I've never been worried about my vote not counting.
Well, she has, and she's been in situations where there were in provisional ballots area that there were a room full of lawyers, and she knows the law as well as those lawyers do. And
you have to with this job. This is not, you know.
That's absolutely correct.
On the job training type job, you have to know what you're doing.
If you violate the law, the Department of Justice is going to be all over you, and the county is going to be sued by different parties, and we wound up paying lawyers a lot of money.
Unfortunately.
Yes.
True. So, okay. Did anybody have to come to you and say, we need you to take down all your racist and bigoted remarks off your social media before you can... I'm just wondering.
No.
And anybody who's done what I've done, you do your research. Somebody's running for office, you don't recognize the name, you're going to go do some research. And I did some research, and I have copies of some of the things that have been since removed. And it's really disturbing.
Well, I hope that none of that reflects on me. Having had the jobs I have had, 21 years in the military and 20 years in commercial airlines operations, you can't do those things and be racially bigoted or biased. That just doesn't work. You can't get the work done. And I've operated with cultures all over the world and different types of people, and all of them having different backgrounds and different perspectives. And I've always been able to work with all people. I just don't think it serves any purpose to get into this racist mindset of posing one group of people against another group of people. It just doesn't promote society. And it just, as I tell my son, whatever you do, try to advance mankind. Yeah. Don't be involved in dragging us down.
Exactly. And I think there's been a lot of dragging down lately all over the country. It's really depressing. Okay. I want to go through this process of when you're registered to vote, you've got a process that you as a citizen have to do. You have to make sure everything's current.
Right.
You can't just willy-nilly walk in and, you know, yeah, not be registered.
Our state law is required that you have to be 18 years old and a resident of the state of Arizona. Then you also are required to give us your residence address. And we have a lot of people that give us their business address instead of their residence address.
Why do they do that?
Well, people, when they're being taxed, they want to have a say in the taxation. So a business owner that lives in the county but has a business in the city, he wants to have a say in who the mayor and the council are. And so oftentimes we'll find that situation, that people live in the county but they're registered in the city. But anytime you change residence, change your name, or change your political party preference, you're required by law to change that in your voter registration. And that is really simple in Arizona. All you have to do is go to servicearizona.com, Give a little bit of information about yourself. It can be a driver's license, a social security number, an address. There's a lot of different pieces of information you can get. And it will show you what your current address is, what your current voter registration status is, and you can change it right there. And then those records go back to the recorder, and your voter registration record is permanently changed.
Okay. What needs to be changed about the process? What do you feel needs to be improved?
Well, I think that the recorder, and this is one of the shortfalls of that I feel that Ann let the community down just a little bit, and not using the public service announcement process enough to inform voters that when you change your address, please change your voter registration, because we spend tens of thousands of dollars in every election sending mail ballots out to people that don't live at those addresses, getting those ballots returned by the post office, and then having to sometimes send a subsequent ballot out to the voter when they call up and say, hey, I never got my mail ballot. Well, we want you to get your mail ballot, but we need to know where you are.
Yeah.
And so we go through that process. The same with provisional ballots. When people haven't updated their voter registration address, we have to use staff resources and staff time and money to go through those. And those, again, are tens of thousands of ballots that are cast in every election that the voters could have helped out a lot by just telling us when you move. It's just that simple.
Now, people don't think, you know, you're changing your utilities. This is one of your utilities. Your right to vote.
It is, but when people move, there's a lot of things going on, and I understand that. You're trying to get a new lease on an apartment or a house or whatever you're doing, and trying to get the kids into a new school and new doctors and whatever else it needs to be done. But at some point prior to the election, you need to go to ServiceArizona.com or call the recorder, either way, and update your records so that we know who you are and where you are and what political party you're in.
Talk to me about ballot harvesting.
Well, it's an issue in the state. We passed a ballot harvesting law several years ago or in the legislature that prohibits people from going around door to door, knocking on a door, saying, hey, you haven't turned your ballot in. Give me your ballot and I'll turn it in for you. There are other events that I've witnessed that they're large entertainment events with music and food, and the price of admission is to bring your ballot and we'll help you fill that ballot out and then turn it in for you. Well, that came to fore in Maricopa County when an individual brought in a box full of ballots and turned them in, and the question was raised, where do those ballots come from? So the legislature passed a law that says it's a felony to harvest ballots. It's always been a felony, or a misdemeanor at least, for a person to give a voted ballot to somebody that's not an election official. On the opposite side, it's a crime to receive a voted ballot from anybody if you're not an election official. So
if I take grandma's ballot because she can't get out, I take grandma's ballot and I drop it in the...
That's legal because she's a family member.
Okay.
There are exceptions. If you're
running up and down the neighborhood with the basket and saying, here, drop it here and I'll...
Yeah, and the problem...
I swear I'll deliver it.
The problem there is a little bit twofold. Are the voters being intimidated to fill a ballot out a certain way because somebody's standing over them at the kitchen table,
right,
or at the door? Or
right,
did you give them a ballot that wasn't voted, but they just signed the affidavit and handed over the ballot? I don't know why people do that sort of thing, but I know they do. Following the 2018 election, I did a precinct-by-precinct analysis all over the state of the late-returned early ballots. And I saw in... all of the border
counties. Okay, wait a minute. Explain that. Late return, early ballots.
Yeah. I get a record of, the political party gets a record every day of ballots that were requested and ballots that were returned.
Okay.
And then after the election, Pima County was really good about continuing to give the party records all the way through the end of the last ballot that got counted. So anything that was not on record as of election day, I consider a late returned early ballot. It either came in the mail on Monday or Tuesday of that election week, or it was dropped off at the polls on election day. And that's about 8 to 10% of the ballots in most counties in the state. Well, I looked at all of those, and I looked at the voters that cast those ballots, and I saw in all of the border counties, Yuma, Pima, Cochise, and Santa Cruz, distinct precincts where there was an abnormally high number of ballots turned in for the precinct versus other elections, and for people who were very low propensity voters, people who did not usually vote in elections had somehow decided to vote in that 2018 general election. I turned that information over to the Attorney General, and nothing was ever done with it as far as I know. But whether that has an impact on elections and the election results, it depends. We have many, many elections that are decided by very, very few votes, sometimes as few as 10 votes. The congressional race here in 2014 and 2016 was a very, very close election. And so when you start getting ballots in that are not verified, or they come from questionable sources, or their origins are questionable, that causes the election results to be questioned as well. So,
what about campaign violations? I know there have been some complaints about the current process, the current campaign.
Well,
and we don't see anything that's being done about it.
And it's very difficult to find things, find out what is actually being done about it. The legislature set up an election fraud office in the Attorney General's office. That is a reactive office. They don't take any proactive actions prior to violations, but citizens can fill out a form, give that to the Attorney General, and have them look at campaign violations. And I think there are currently some investigations going on by that office. At the local level, those complaints have to be made to the county attorney. And in this county, even though we've had situations where people have tried to vote twice on the same day at the same polling place, and we've turned those violations into the county attorney, and nothing is ever done. The same thing, we have hundreds of voters who attempt to vote who are not registered to vote. They sign an affidavit on that provisional ballot, say, I'm registered to vote, I reside at this address, but they're not registered to vote, or that address doesn't exist. There are a lot of different kinds of violations on that order. And typically in Arizona, unfortunately, at least in Pima County, those violations have not been properly investigated and prosecuted.
Have you received any special interest or dark money donations like your opponent has?
Well, I don't know. I don't keep track of my opponent's money, other than she has one independent expenditure in the primary that we might want to talk about. But I have.
You want to talk about it now?
Well, my contributions have been $5, $10, $25. I've not received any money whatsoever from a PAC or any.
You got $70,000. I was like.
Yeah.
For what? You don't even have 5 minutes of experience for this job. Why are you, you know?
Yeah, that.
Don't get me on my band.
Well, that was an independent expenditure by an organization out of Phoenix called Lucha. And a part of what Lucha discusses is removing the chains from the oppressed. And Ms. Caceres Kelly, in part of her statements, has made a comment that the only thing she has to lose is her chains. So there's a fairly close coordination between Lucha and Ms. Caceres Kelly. And on primary election night, she was very effusive in her thanks to Lucha for helping her in the campaign. And all of that is supposed to be independent with no communication and coordination between the candidate and campaign. So I don't know how much talking was going on there. The problem with that PAC money is you don't know what the origins of it are. You don't know where it came from. It could be money that's being laundered from criminal activities or anything else. You just don't know. It's not public record.
And it's really sad.
Yeah. One additional point on that is that Lucha is currently in a violation of our campaign reporting because they did not submit a pre-primary report on their activities, even though they're still an active committee. My understanding, talking to the elections department, which does campaign finance compliance, is that they have turned that information over now to the county attorney's office for investigation. And, yet to be seen what action will be taken.
No, you don't see any reports or any activity on, you know, let's keep this honest, let's keep it above board, and it's just in the weeds.
Yeah, there's a presumption in election law, as in many laws, that most people comply with the law, and there needs to be a way to enforce the law when they don't. A lot of that rests with our county attorney or the attorney general to follow through on those things.
Okay, we're going to go ahead and take a break. And when we come back, we're going to keep talking about voting.
To report suspected human trafficking, please call the National Human Trafficking Resource Center at 1-888-373-7888 or text HELP or INFO to 233-733. To learn more about Homeland Security investigations and our efforts to combat human trafficking, please visit our website at www.ice.gov or check out the DHS Blue Campaign at www.dhs.gov/bluecampaign. For more information on the Southern Arizona Anti-Trafficking Unified Response Network, please visit us at www.saturn.org or find us on Facebook.
Getting a reverse mortgage with the new rules and expanded limits can be a positive, life-changing experience. The reverse offers multiple ways of having your equity work for you, from a monthly income, an interest-bearing equity account, or a total cash out. Give me a call and let's see which reverse option best works for your future plans. Call 520-310-9900. Ask for me, Sherry. That's 520-310-9900.
This is Nathan Chabin, producer for the Law Matters Live show, airing Saturday mornings at 8, when our listeners ask questions of the people who have answers. On our next show, we speak with Jim Fuda about Crime Stopper Global Solutions and what you need to know. This is your show, Arizona, so get your questions ready to join the talk at 790-2040. You don't want to be left out. Set your alarm to AM 1030 The Voice. We can't do this show without your support. Please go to lawmatters1030.org to contribute.
With monsoon season well underway, the Tucson Fire Department would like you to keep these tips in mind on how to stay safe. Turn around, don't drown. Driving through a mere 8 inches of water can move your vehicle and cause you to be swept away. When thunder roars, head indoors. When you see that lightning flash and hear thunder, you need to drop what you're doing and head inside. When in doubt, wait it out. Save your errands for after storms have passed through your area. Remember, Tucson Fire is here for you. Stay safe.
Thanks for staying with us. Our guest today is Benny White. He is running for the recorder's office. And Nathan has a question.
We have talked about your opponent's questionable social media and financing, along with her apparent lack of experience. But aside from that, why are you the better candidate? How's your policy going to help the recorder's office? And why is it important that you are elected?
Good question.
Thank you for that question, Nathan. I think that I am extremely well qualified for this position due to my long involvement of 12 years in election and election law and dealing with all aspects of elections and lawsuits that are involved for election contests and petition challenges, all those kinds of things that have happened. Those qualifications and experience are far exceed what my opponent brings to the table. And in addition to that, I have an extensive knowledge of the law that applies, both the federal law and the state law that applies to both the election side, division of the office, and the recording side of the office. And one of the interesting facts about the recording side of the office is if you make a mistake in the recording of documents that are required that cause injury to a party, and that was done through negligence or malfeasance, you are subject to a fine of 3 times the damage that was caused. And we just can't stand to have someone that has no qualifications, no experience, enter that office and wants to learn all of those things. As I say, I've been involved for 12 years and have a law degree, and I still learn about various aspects of the law and the application and how to apply the various court decisions that come down from time to time. So I just don't think there's any comparison between, and I am a nonpartisan actor. I run as a Republican because you have to be one political party or another to run. But in all of my activities and in everything that I've done with regard to elections and in the litigation. I do it in a nonpartisan fashion. I leave my Republican hat at the door, and I'm just trying to apply the law and try to do that fairly. And I, you know, my opponent wants to somehow use the office for advancement of some political agenda or social policy
agenda. She said that during a debate, too. She said it gives her a political platform to promote her agenda.
The recorder's office is just not the place for that. There's a role for that to be done, but it is not in the recorder's office where you have so much influence on the way elections are administered. And even in the recording side of the House, you want to make sure that you're not doing things that are impacting the economy of the county or the financial status of property owners. All of those things have to be done legally and on time.
In a timely manner. Okay, we have a caller. Gloria, thank you for listening to the show. What's on your mind?
I worked for the city about 10... Well, it's been a while. It's been a while. And I didn't interact with Mr. White very often, but I recall that every time I did, when you're speaking to him, he actually watches you and listens. He wasn't like other city workers who were looking to see if the city manager might walk by or the mayor or something like that. He actually looked at you and listened. This seems to me that it tells a lot about who he is. I don't think you expected a plug from me, Mr. White.
No, I didn't, but I certainly appreciate it.
I don't think you even remember me, which is fine. but I really am impressed by a good listener. It speaks volumes about them. And I'm so glad you're running, and I wish you the very best.
Well, I thank you for that. And one of the things that I learned in my military career is that when you go into a new office, you need to listen to what the supervisors have to say, how they work with the staff that they're supervising, what their trust level is, and then gain their trust. And you have to do that by listening to them. Oftentimes, you may think you have the greatest idea in the world, but your supervisors and the people that work for you come up with some really innovative, productive solutions to difficult and complex problems. So I really do appreciate your comments this morning.
Thank you for calling in, Gloria. That brings me to another thought. If you are elected, are you going to purge the office?
Not at all. Ann Rodriguez has done a great job over the 28 years of building a very professional staff that do the jobs very well. There are some things that I want to look at that I think will cause some improvements, but I have no intention at all of going in there and moving the desk around, moving the chairs around just for the purpose of being the new guy in office. I want to keep people on board that are doing their jobs today and make sure that office continues to function without interruption. We don't get a break. On day one, recording still has to be done. Voter registration has to be done. We have to prepare for redistricting coming up in the very near future. I'll have to spend 2 or 3 months getting a budget for the following year together. And all of those things are very time-consuming, and I need that professional staff to be on board and to help me get all that work done.
That sounds good. I know a lot of people would be like, oh, new guy is going to clean out the office. And that happened locally on, you know.
Unfortunately, that happens a lot with elected officials, and it never turns out well.
No, it doesn't. And even some appointed people think they should just clean house and start fresh. And that's not a good thing. Okay. What do you want our listeners to know about you personally, not just the job?
Well, I'm well qualified. I could be doing something else. I could go back into retirement rather than do this. But I look at this as an excellent opportunity to further serve my community and do something that I know that I can do a very good job at. And it's a very, very important job, both on the recording side with all the property records that have to be recorded continually, but also on the election side, we need to make sure as a country and as a society that we have trust in our elections. We need to make sure that we know who is voting, and that when those results are announced, we don't have to spend 2 or 3 months in court trying to decide whether the I's and the T's were all dotted and crossed. We need to make sure it was done legally in the first place. So I think I'm capable of doing that, and that's been my history over my involvement in election oversight for the last 12 years.
Do you have any debates scheduled with your opponent?
There is one tonight. The League of Women Voters of Greater Tucson is going to host a Zoom event, and people can go to lwvtucson.org, and there's a link on there that will give you that Zoom link that you can click on and watch. That happens tonight at 4 o'clock, and so you need internet access and you need a computer, but that probably will be the only event where Ms. Cazares-Kelly and I will be one-on-one with each other, and the voters will get an opportunity to see what a competent, qualified candidate looks like and what one with no experience and no qualifications looks like. And I'm hoping that they'll choose the qualified and competent candidate and vote for me.
Can you ride a scooter?
Probably should stay off of that, along with ladders and other things.
I'm just wondering. That seemed to be the only qualification that...
I've been able to figure out a lot of things, but I think I'm going to leave that one to my opponent.
Okay. Nathan, what's on your mind?
Nothing else is really on my mind right now.
Okay. Just giving you the opportunity.
Thank you for that.
I might make a comment, Nathan, that you told us that your birthday is after the November election, and that's unfortunate. You're a very astute young man. I wish you would be able to vote in the election and vote for me. But for everybody else that's out there that might be 17 years old, if your birthday is prior to November 3rd, you can register to vote now, even though you're not 18, and then you can cast a ballot on November 3rd.
I didn't know that.
Yep.
That's cool.
You can register early, and so long as you're going to be 18 by the date of the election.
Okay. Something that there are different areas of the county that are pretty remote, and there's a big thing going on right now because some areas don't have a polling place to cast their ballots.
Right.
What is your solution for this issue?
Well, there's a number of factors that have to be involved in that decision, and all of them involve budgetary constraints. We don't have money to do everything that we would like to do, so we have to live within our budgets. And so I look at the number of people that are in those areas and their participation in the mail voting system. Currently in Pima County, as a result primarily of the COVID restrictions that we currently have, about 85% of Democrats are registered with the permanent early voting list to get a mail ballot for this election. And about 75% of the Republicans are registered to get a mail ballot. So that leaves us with about 20 to 25% of the population that is not going to get a mail ballot that needs to be serviced with the polling place or election day voting, or with early voting. Ann Rodriguez has always had early voting sites that start about 2 weeks prior to the election. I think she's dealing with about 14 of those sites right at the moment, and plans to do that for the general election. And those are located around the county, and primarily in county buildings. There are a few churches that are involved, but there are places where they can have security and they have internet access so that you can have the various machines and storage for ballots and those kind of things in a secure location. And that will continue to be my practice as a recorder. Now, with respect to the rural location of people, there are many different types of rural locations in Pima County. Some of them are out west of the Tucson Mountains in the Picture Rocks area and Arizona City, along Interstate 10, going out that way. Another area is down toward Aravaca, down this side of Mount Hopkins, into that area. Down Highway 83 is another fairly remote area. And those populations are very, very sparse. They're not concentrated in any one area. And typically, there's not a public building available down there. One of the problems that the elections department has is finding polling places. Those polling places sometimes charge the county as much as $1,500 per day for rental.
You can use my house.
To be a polling place. They have to be ADA accessible so that you can get a wheelchair in and out without any assistance. So there's a lot of problems with that. And with the COVID experience, a lot of the public schools that we historically have used have now declined to be used as polling places. So they're trying to scratch around and find new polling places, and there will be some changes from time to time in those polling places. But when I look at rural populations, I look at people that live on ranches and in remote areas. A lot of those people are very independent people that don't want a lot of government involvement in their lives. And I don't think it's the role of government to impose ourselves on them either. Now, with respect to the Indian nations, I fully respect the Pascua-Yaqui Nation and the Tohono O'odham Nation as independent sovereign nations. They have their own constitutions, their own governments, their own set of laws, their own elections departments. And so I will work vigorously to identify any problems that those nations have with both registering voters and with conducting elections and allowing people to early vote. And we'll resolve any problems that they have with access. But again, all of those decisions have to be made with consideration for how much money do we have to spend and where can we best serve the public. Because there are going to be about 600,000 voters involved in the election this fall, and we always need to balance those priorities out.
Okay, we have another caller. Lauren, you have a question?
Yes, I do. I'll try to make it brief, and that regards our home's title. Now, years ago when I got my home paid for, thank goodness, I hand-carried, I believe I did, the title down to the recorder's office to get it properly recorded as being paid for. That was so long ago, I don't remember much about the process. But these days, we're getting scared to death hearing all about this home title theft, because your home title is online and it can be readily transferred fraudulently to a person that has no business with my home title. And of course, the ads are spawned from people, I believe, selling home title insurance. Do we need to buy that insurance?
Well, I can't give you advice on buying insurance, but I will tell you that I am aware of the problem. There is a need for the public to have access to those public records of deeds and titles and mortgages and liens and all the other property records that the recorder is required to keep and archive. But as you say, there is a problem when those records are published on the internet that they can be forged. People can change the dates, they can change the names, they can even change the descriptions of the property in some instances. And one of the things I want to look at my position as a recorder is imparting some type of a electronic signature, if you will, that would be verifiable that the image was authenticated by the recorder's office, and that electronic signature or that electronic imprint on that image cannot be changed, so that if there's ever a dispute about what is the original document, that document can be shown to the court and the issue resolved. There's been some suggestion that a blockchain technology could be applied to those records. I have some other evidence that may not be the way to go, because there's no central authenticating authority involved with blockchain. Any two people can enter into a blockchain transaction and cause that record to be generated. And also, there's no single blockchain network that contains all of those records. So you could have a blockchain record over in one network or a different blockchain record over in a different network, and now how are we going to decide which one of those is actually the valid? So I think we need a central authenticating authority to verify that those documents are valid and original. And that's something I want to work on with other recorders in the state and probably nationally, because these records have to be recognized across county lines and across state lines. And we want to make sure that they are easily verifiable and are prohibit forgery of those important documents. Thank you for that question, though.
Did that answer it, Lauren?
If it got forged, am I in big trouble? Am I going to lose my house because some criminal managed to get my title?
That's a possibility. We have not had any occurrences of that in Pima County. They've had a couple, as I understand it, in Maricopa County, and they publish a lot more records there. Adrian Fontes, the recorder there, is very proud of publishing millions of records online. That may not be prudent if those records are vulnerable to being forged. But so far in Pima County, we have not had an incident that I'm aware of. But yes, it can involve going to court and paying lawyers and having a judge make a determination. And that's a very lengthy, scary process.
And it was an issue with people who, you know, snowbirds, they leave their houses down here empty.
Right.
And people know they're empty because they're up in wherever, Wisconsin, wherever.
Right.
And things can happen when you're not there. You don't even realize that, you know, somebody else owns your house now.
Right. That's a little, that forgery problem is a different problem than a legal process called adverse possession. I don't want to go into that, but that is a legal process. If people abandon their property over a long period of time,
that's a different situation.
Someone else can come in, but that's a different situation than you're talking about.
So, yes, you would want to, if you're going to sell your house, I know title insurance is purchased, and there's a reason for it, and this is the reason.
Thank you.
Okay. Have a good day. Thanks for listening. When we getting back to the election in polling places and mailing ballots, I've listened to some of the newscasts, and I'm like, okay, elections are planned out years in advance. It's not like we have a pop-up election. Surprise. Why not, as a voter, do your due diligence, plan on how you're going to get your ballot back to the recorder's office, whether you're using the postal system or, you know, you're dropping it off at an early ballot drop-off place, and mine is, 9 miles away? So, you know, that's my choice, to drive it down to Broadway and drop it off. I don't understand why people aren't planning ahead. Maybe because my parents were in the Marine Corps?
Well, I don't
know. You
plan
ahead.
A lot of people open the refrigerator door and wonder why there's no milk in there. You do need to plan ahead a little bit. Right now, the Postal Service is saying they can accommodate the mail ballot voting in Arizona. They are recommending, however, that you plan on sending that ballot back 7 days before the election. That would be on the Tuesday prior to the election at the end of October. You need to get that ballot back into the mail. When I talked to the Cochise County officials, they say sometimes it takes as long as 10 days down there for a piece of mail to get from a voter's mailbox to the Phoenix sorting office and back down to Bisbee to the recorder's office. So
it does take a little longer now because everything was moved up to Phoenix.
It does. It does take longer. We still have the Cherry Bells sorting facility open here, and they are still processing our ballots at that facility. So we don't take that extra day or 2 days to go back and forth to Phoenix on ballots. People should be aware that if you put it back in the mailbox, it may take a little bit longer to get there. But you can still drop that off anytime during the early voting period at any of the 14 early voting locations. You can take it to either of the recorder's offices on the east over on Broadway, or take it downtown to Stone. Or on election day, you can walk it in and drop it off at any polling place. It doesn't have to be yours. It doesn't have to be the one in your neighborhood. Any polling place, you can drop that ballot off, and it will be counted. On election night, at 8 o'clock, you see that first bunch of ballots counted. And those are starting to be counted about 14 days before the election for people that got their early ballot and then mailed it back in right away. On election night, then, all of the ballots that were dropped off at the polling places are picked up by the election officials, transferred over to the elections department, and they go through those ballots and do all the normal processing. And those are counted in the 2 or 3 or 4 days following the election. So those first election results you see are all mail ballots that were sent in back on time. And then the following days, you will continue to see updates come in on the election results. And those are those, what I call the late early ballots.
Okay. Well, Jane's on the phone. She has a question.
Yes. I just needed to know, my husband, who has a medical condition and does a mail-in ballot, is it best to put a postage stamp on the envelope when you mail it in?
No, please don't do that.
No, the
permit is on there for a reason. We can keep track of it that way. We know where that ballot is all the time, so please don't put a postage stamp on it. There are some states that don't pay for postage, Georgia being one of those that's in the news recently. And that kind of brings me to an issue in the courts right now about ballots being postmarked. We don't postmark ballots in Arizona because they are permit mailed. And so the post office doesn't postmark any permit mail. So we don't know when a ballot entered the mail system. There's a court case pending right now to continue to count ballots, even if they're received after Election Day. The problem with that is that we announce results on election night, and that may or may not favor the candidate that you want or the campaign that you want. And if we're going to continue to accept ballots for maybe a week after the election day, how many of those ballots were cast in response to the election results that were initially announced on Tuesday night? We just don't know. So the election is over at 7 p.m. on election day. And then any of the ballots that we have in hand at that time will get counted.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Okay. When do the early ballots go out?
They're going to begin mailing them out of Phoenix, out of Runbeck Printing, on October 7th, and that might continue for a couple of days. There's a lot of ballots going to be sent out. Probably 450,000, 500,000 ballots will be mailed out, and the postal system may not be able to ingest all of those on one day. But over the 1 or 2 or maybe 3 days, October 7th, 8th, and 9th, those ballots will go out. And so by that Saturday, people will start seeing ballots in their mail. And by the following Wednesday, if you were on the permanent early voting list, you should see your ballot. So about October 12th, you should see your ballot if you're on the permanent early voting list.
And do your homework and get it back in the mail. Send it back right away. And, you know what you're going to do. Do your ballot and send it out. Now, you said polls close at 7 o'clock, but if you're in line to vote,
You still get to vote.
You get to vote.
Yeah.
So make sure you're in line before 7 o'clock because somebody will go out there and stand at the back of the line and not let you vote if you're late.
That's right. The marshal comes out. He tells that person, you're the last in line, and you carry a card, or he stands there with you to make sure that you get counted properly. You know, if anybody wants any more information about me, please go to my website, bennyforrecorder.com. I have interviews and videos and all my positions on all of the things. What you see is what you get with me. I don't have any hidden agendas, and I'm hoping that everyone will decide I'm the best qualified candidate for this office and vote for me in November.
And you're not going to use this office for a political platform?
No, I just want to have fair and honest elections.
And that's what it's about, fair and honest elections, and that's what we expect of our recorder. Real quick, because we only have a minute left, campaign violations. How do we force them to do something about it? Because obviously nothing's being done.
Well, we need to elect county recorders that make that a part of their campaign and a commitment while they're in office to do that. My intention is to try to work with our county recorder or our county attorney here, the county attorney's office. There will be an attorney out of the office assigned to the county recorder. I don't act as my own attorney while I'm in that office, But if I'm not able to work with the county attorney to get enforcement, I'll go to the attorney general or the FBI or the Department of Justice to make sure that our laws are enforced.
Very cool. I appreciate you coming on, Nathan. I appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
And remember, vote and register to vote.
Absolutely. Thank you, Sharon.
Thank you.